Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, you're all over the damn place, dude. You got The Athletic, you got Silver Screen, you got this show. Like, how much free time do you have, would you say? And what do you prefer to do with... Nope, let's not answer that second part. But how much free time how much free time do you usually, like, at this point, is it just like a meal here or there?
Dude, it's been nuts. Like, I don't know. I feel like this year especially is kind of my shot, right, to really make a big impression with what I do. So it's 7 days a week right now. You know, my girl and I have reserved, and I violate this most days, but we try and get like between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m., kind of like put the computers away type thing and hang out. But even then, like, it's been tough to do that. So, I mean, nothing I'd rather be doing, right? So it's more of a lifestyle at this point than a job, because it's pretty much what I do all the time.
Yeah, it was funny. Last night, we just had my in-laws were in town for Father's Day weekend. And, you know, the night kind of was winding down, and I'd had a couple glasses of wine already. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I recorded an extra show on Saturday. I'll just, you know, I'll take tonight off and I'll make some announcement. And then I just realized, like, you realize you're taking a day off from what a lot of people consider dream jobs.
Yep.
What I myself considered a dream job only months ago, or like a year or so ago. And so, like, I was just like, well, all right, I'd feel pretty stupid to take a day off work, quote unquote work, for doing that. So I guess this is a good thing to be busy with. Speaking of busy, you reminded me, it's been so crazy lately that you had to remind me this is the last show we're going to record before the Lakers have their NBA draft on Thursday. So one, thanks for that. And two, everybody listening, that's what we're going to focus on today. We're going to talk about some of the guys who the Lakers might hope to have fall to them. We're going to talk about some of the needs and really officially get some needs down for the Lakers heading into the draft. We're going to talk briefly about the pick that I put in for the Locked On NBA mock draft, which is going across the network right now. So you guys are going to want to check that out. And we're gonna end on some wild predictions. We're going to have some fun with this. We're going to end on some wild predictions here. Fun show ahead. As always, you guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find me on Twitter, at Anthony Irwin LA. Strokes are fun. at Locked On Lakers and at Laker Film Room. All right, so let's. You wrote your debut article for The Athletic, and congratulations for that. The three guys who you are focused on, and you're saying a two-part article, are Kevin Huerter, Mitchell Robinson, and Dante DiVincenzo, who is going to be the Red Mamba 2.0, according to Twitter, which is something I see all over the place. But of those three guys, I feel like you're based on what I've heard from you, Herter's at the top of the list there, then Robinson, and then Dante, or is the order different from you?
Robinson is a guy that, like, you could talk me into or you could talk me out of him. My biggest concerns with Robinson is that there are in areas where there's a big information gap, right? Mm-hmm. When I watch him on tape, he's one of those guys that makes an amazing highlight reel. And then you watch games of him and you're like, oh, this is why he might be available at 25, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a great motor. He does not really know how to play the game yet. He's a bit of a project in just like the simple things. Like, he will drive an NBA coach nuts early on in his career. Like, he does not sprint to his screens and set good screens. He does not close out well, doesn't rotate particularly well. And what concerns me in all of that is that he's not one of those guys, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about when I say this. There's some guys when they're young where they're like, they're dumb, but they're a ball of energy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're trying. It's errors of the old basketball coach phrases. I prefer errors of commission rather than omission, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're trying too hard. You just made the wrong decision. You made a young mistake.
The Roomba analogy, where, like, you bounce around the court. you pick up whatever you can.
Perfect. Robinson isn't like that. In Robinson's worst moments, he's kind of loafing about around the court. And then you didn't see him in college, right? So there's all these questions like, does this guy love the game? Is he going to make millions of dollars and then really still apply himself to learning it? Does he have the motor to do it? All of that is wrapped in this really phenomenal physical package and skill set, right? He's really coordinated for a legit 7-footer, great reflexes with both hands, great double jumper. He's one of those guys where you get the offensive rebound, he goes right back up with it before anybody else even has a chance to jump. So for me, operating with the information that we have, I go Herder, DiVincenzo, Robinson, and Herder is also a redhead. But like Robinson could very well be at the top of that. I just don't know what the Lakers know in terms of what kind of kid he is.
So I've been working on this theory for a bit here. And actually, you know what? I'm gonna tease this theory. But I've been working on this theory for a bit, and it has to do with bigs in the first round and mentality like we talked about with Mitchell Robinson. I'm going to get to that theory here in a second. All right, so here's my concern with bigs. Guards, wings, like people of similar size and stature, have to overcome each other in order to reach the heights of the NBA, right? That's why like you listen to guards talk about a game and you listen to bigs talk about the game. And it's almost two completely different conversations, not just from a positional standpoint, but from a passionate standpoint. And the bigs who have a guards type of passion are usually the special bigs. And anytime I hear about a guy who is as physically talented and as big as Mitchell Robinson is, but you hear any of the concern about passion for the game, I'm immediately out on that guy. Because in my opinion, or in my experience, when you see that kind of player come through, they're there because, well, they have no real other choice. Like, I'm this talented, I have these gifts, I may as well put them to use, and here I am being a big on a basketball court. And, you know, if for me, especially when you take into account where the game is going and what kind of a big you have to be and how special you have to be as a big to compete with this complete switchability and positionless basketball that we're seeing in the modern era. Well, I just don't think it's worth the gamble. I think I'd rather try to see what I can find, maybe even in the second round to if because the commitment to that isn't such that, you know, maybe you're passing up on what the Lakers have found late in the first round lately anyway. And so with like Mitchell Robinson, if he falls to the Lakers and they take him, it would just really concern me that it would be one of those Robert Upshaw kind of situations where, yeah, those questions about talent or those questions about passion and I guess character, for lack of a better term, well, they were there for a reason. Am I being too hard on Robinson here?
Well, the thing with Robinson is that we don't know, right? Like, that's the thing, is he didn't play college ball. It's these brief clips against kids that he's way more talented than. I guess the one thing I would say in his favor is that he's a really good rebounder. There's a league called the EYBL, and which is a high-end like AAU type of league. And I believe he's got one of the highest rebounding averages that's ever been recorded in that league. And it's hard to be a good rebounder if you don't have effort. That said, I really love your theory. I think there's a lot to that. I think if you're 7 feet tall and you have coordination, like your odds of playing in the NBA or high level college basketball are really high, right? If you're 6'5", you have to be a pretty bad dude to be able to succeed and make it into the NBA. And you have to have things about you that separate you. It's hard to do that if you don't love the game on some level, right?
Yeah.
I don't know about Mitchell Robinson. It's just a concern that I have. And I hope that if the Lakers are interested in him, and I think they're intrigued, I hope they've really done their homework on him in that respect.
We've talked quite a bit about Kevin Herder, so let's just not skip. But if you guys want to hear us talk about Kevin Herder, go back. We have previous episodes about him or segments on him. But we haven't really talked about Dante DiVincenzo, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But I'm kind of surprised that he's even a possibility. I've always kind of thought he was going to be a low-end lottery pick.
you know, it depends on who you talk to. And that's the thing with the draft is only one team has to fall in love with the guy. When we talk about the draft, I think a lot of times we can get too overall and broad with it, right? Like if 29 teams think that a guy should be the 25th pick in the draft and the team picking at number 18 thinks he's the 12th best player in the draft, he's going at 18. You know what I'm saying? And so like it doesn't have to be the consensus of where a guy is supposed to go. He did get a green room invite. It's interesting because Draft Twitter and a lot of the really brilliant guys that have helped improve my knowledge of the draft, this draft and previous drafts, they're lower on DiVincenzo than I think NBA teams are. I think there's a lot of interest in him, and he got that green room invite so he'll be one of the guys in attendance, which is normally reserved for the higher guys. I think they invited 20 guys this year. But with a guy like him, he's a really talented scorer off of the dribble. I guess the best comparison I could give for Laker fans is like Jordan Clarkson without the really bad parts to Jordan Clarkson. You know, he's a really dynamic pick and roll scorer. He's got a ton of bounce. He had the best vertical leap at the combine. And, you know, he's a 1 foot jumper. I'm sorry, he's a 2 foot jumper. So he's a guy that needs space. Like, he's not going to be a guy that raises up and dunks on somebody in traffic. But if he's going to crash the boards from the weak side or something like that, he gets some rebounds that are like, whoa, what was that? He's really talented in that Clarkson type of sense, but he's a Villanova kid, has a much better understanding of the game than a guy like JC had.
I think so. For those of you who are listening and don't quite get what Pete is talking about when he says 1 versus 2 foot jumpers, think Lonzo Ball like sprinting down the court and then elevating to below the rim because he's more of a 2 foot jumper.
Exactly.
And then, you know, you think if he does get that kind of runway and he can time his steps up, he can get up there. And he does. He has those like wow plays. But more often than not, those 1 foot jumpers are a little better equipped to score going to the basket in traffic. Although
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Go ahead.
Well, it's the only concern with 1 foot jumpers, though, is that you're a lot more, I guess, open to injury in the air because you're coming off of – you're literally off of 1 foot. And so you're working with angles that are a little different than a 2 foot jumper. But, yeah, it's a great point. And actually, it's really cool. And you mentioned a lot of the draft guys who are just – are killing it in their draft coverage. And it's these minutiae. Like the other day I was on Twitter and, oh man, I forgot who it was that was talking about it. But one of the concerns with Jaren Jackson Jr. is his fouling issues. And they took you step by step as to why those issues aren't as big a concern in the NBA versus in college. And some of the things that they were talking about were like college has a much higher emphasis on charges and offensive fouls and stuff like that. He talked about why physically he put himself in these situations, and it's why I don't venture into draft coverage myself. And people ask, like my father-in-law was like, wait, so you could technically get into draft coverage and you could try to do it and you don't. And I said, I don't do it because I look like an idiot compared to the people who are already doing it exponentially better than I would anyway. So I think it's important we shout those guys out. Is there any concern with fit for Dante? Like, how do you think he would fit on the Lakers roster?
So on the good side of things, that guy who can score off of ball screens, remember, this is one of my like, but Isaiah Thomas can do this type thing. Like for all of his, that was my main argument, right? He's one of those guys. He's like, don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he was like 92nd percentile or something like that as a scorer off of ball screens. Ingram's not great at that. Lonzo's really not good at that. Lakers don't have a guard that's capable of doing that. And I think he's good enough on the defensive end to where that's really valuable. He's not an Isaiah Thomas level bad defender. That said, he's not a great defender, and he's fairly small. He's 6'4 and a half in shoes with like a 6'6 wingspan. He's got a good motor and he rotates really well. So he's a guy you can depend, like if you need him to tag the roll man from the weak side, he's going to do that. If you need him to close out hard or rotate on the weak side, he's going to do that. You need him to switch. And what happens a lot of times is, say you switch and you got Randall defending James Harden on the perimeter. All right, that's cool. Randall can do that, as great as Harden is. But then you're going to have Clint Capella walking the guard that switched onto him, walking him down under the basket to try and get that offensive rebound. that's problematic with DiVincenzo. That's not something that he's not big enough, he's not strong enough to do that. So if you can keep DiVincenzo on the weak side, he can really help you defensively on ball situations or in switching situations. It's going to be a problem.
Gotcha. That's good to know. And that's a perfect segue into the next thing we're going to talk about in the third and final segment here is needs. Heading into the draft, the Lakers have needs, and some of those are going to be kind of variable because of everything that's going on around the Lakers, and maybe we'll allude to some of that stuff. We'll get to everything here in a second. So not much has really been going on, right? Like, I guess it's just been the Kawhi stuff and the LeBron stuff and the Paul George stuff and
that, you know.
Beyond that, nothing's really going on. But let's do it this way. We'll talk about the needs in a vacuum as best we can, and then maybe we'll kind of alter those needs based on scenario here. So just in a vacuum, what do you think are the two or three biggest spots that you think the Lakers need to really focus on in Thursday's draft?
Lakers need shooters, man.
Yep.
Like,
absolutely.
As much as I love the young core and I hope they do not get pulled apart over the course of this summer, like, they're really not that great as shooters. You got Kuz and you got Hart and then a bunch of question marks. And to me, I think they're going to be heavily leaning toward that. That being said, when you have the 25th pick in the draft, you have, depending on which study you believe, between about a 30 and 40% chance of just getting a rotational player, just a guy who could be seventh, eighth man type of guy. Anything beyond that is obviously a much lower percentage. Mm-hmm. So I think it's foolish when you're picking at that point of the draft specifically to put another filter on, and he has to shoot. Like, if you get a really good guy, like one guy that is really starting to grow on me is DeAnthony Melton, who is questionable as a shooter. He was out last season, didn't shoot well as a freshman, has changed his form, and I think that he's made positive changes. But he does everything else really well. He's a Marcus Smart type of guy, really high-level defender. He's the type of guy, he's going to be a rotation player on a good NBA team like Josh Hart. He's a little different than Hart, can't shoot nearly as well, does a couple of things differently. But DeAnthony Melton is going to be a good player in the NBA. Do you pass up on him because he can't shoot, because the rest of your roster can't shoot? Well, what if the other guy that you draft is in the other 60 or 70% that isn't an NBA player? As well as the front office has done, one of the things I think they've done well is go BPA at that point, with Kuzma being drafted when you've got two power forwards 25 or under being an example of that.
Yeah, I think my number one focus would be shooting. And yes, I do like the concept of DeAnthony Melton, and we saw with Marcus Smart that, you know, he came into the league, he wasn't really able to shoot at all. I think he was like a historically bad shooter, and he's still a bad shooter. But, you know, when he shoots a three-pointer, I don't laugh audibly the way that I used to. And he was still able to retain all of his defensive kind of skills that have become hugely valuable for the Celtics. Maybe that's best case scenario with Melton here. Even if that's best case scenario, though, I just think man, it's tough. I think I go with need over BPA, but not to the extreme example where, like, if I'm looking at somebody who literally can only shoot and that's it, and they can't do anything else, well, they probably won't be a good an NBA player anyway, right? So you got to keep it within reason. But for what the Lakers need here, considering it's such a stark need, man, just add shooters. that's really all I want to see Thursday. Any other need that you see for the Lakers before we get into, I guess, situational needs, depending on how the offseason might play out?
I mean, the kind of things that they need aren't things that you're going to find at 25. Like, they need the man, right? And hopefully that those guys, and hopefully more than one, are coming in a couple of weeks, right? But they need a guy to move Lonzo off of the ball more, a guy that can put Ingram on the weak side where he did a nice job as a cutter and he'll have more spot-up opportunities, which isn't to say to take the ball out of either of those guys' hands. Totally, right? But they need a guy who can be the man and push those guys into more natural roles that are blended between on-ball responsibilities and off. The one thing I did want to say, though, you talked about guys who can shoot and only shoot. One guy who I heard really killed it at the Lakers workout is Svi Mykhailiuk out of Kansas. Mm-hmm. He was a four-year player, but he's a young four-year player. He just turned 21 because he started in Ukraine professionally at like 15, started at Kansas at the age of 17. So he ended his career fairly young. That guy can shoot the crap out of a basketball, and mm-hmm. he did so. That was one of the few bits of buzz that I've gotten from being around the facility, was that he just shot the crap out of the ball at his workout. And the Lakers historically put a lot of stock into those workouts. Probably not a great choice at 25, but he wouldn't be the first guy that surprised. They took Nance at 27, and no one expected that. He's a better prospect for the 47th pick, but I do wonder if the Lakers would be like, hey, we'll put everything else to the side. If you are a great shooter, we think that all of these things are going to happen with LeBron and Paul George and all that. We need guys who can just stroke it. Then he might be that guy.
I'm glad you bring up the fact that, you know, the Lakers have kind of surprised. This is the last point I'll make about the kind of, in a general sense, trying to predict what the Lakers are trying or might think about doing in a draft is mostly a fool's errand based on recent history. And that dates back to before Magic and Rob Pelinka, mostly because the draft team that was in place has carried over from Mitch and Jim Buss to Magic and Rob Pelinka. And so, you know, you kind of, I think usually what winds up playing out is, you look back at the draft and maybe you weren't happy about, you know, at the time when a player was selected, but then you kind of look back and you say, well, shoot, if the Lakers were taking, I think the example that kind of comes to mind here is the Larry Nance Jr. Anthony Brown draft, where you said, well, I remember seeing a bunch of, well, I was hoping for both of those guys. They were just taken in reverse order. And, you know, if that's how it plays out, cool. Now, it turns out Anthony Brown was immensely unplayable across his time in the NBA, and it's really kind of a bummer. But you kind of see how that all plays out. So for those of you who are trying to mock the Lakers, and not by mock joking, but mock where they might pick, good luck.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, man, is like those guys between, heck, 15 and 35, they're not that far apart. And it's going to be a matter of preference. And I think we can get too rigid as fans being like, oh, that guy's mocked to go 32nd. How could you take him at 25? It's like, mm-hmm. Come on, man. That's basically the same thing. And if nothing else, this Lakers front office has earned the benefit of the doubt, the scouting department in particular.
Here.
Front offices like Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka are not spending all year watching Tulane basketball and European basketball. Like the job of the scouting department is to put options on the table in front of them. And then, so there's some power in that, right? The scouting department says, hey, we're going to really push these 10 guys in front of Magic and Pelinka but Magic and Pelinka are going to really rely on their scouting department, and they've done a really nice job. So for me as a fan, whoever they take, I'll be cool with. They've earned that benefit of the doubt.
We've kind of talked about this before, and I've teased this since the start of the segment, but if the Lakers feel confident enough to draft based on need, you know, based on how they think this offseason might go, does that shift the way you would want to see the Lakers draft if they really think LeBron James is coming or if they think Paul George might be coming?
Not for me personally. Again, I'll trust what they do. But to me, again, it's just so hard to find an NBA player at that point. And one of the things I hearken back to is when the Lakers were a title team under Phil, sometimes during those late picks, and they didn't have as many of them as I wish they did, but sometimes they would draft guys for quote-unquote triangle fit, and there weren't necessarily the best basketball players on the board. I think that you can figure stuff out when you take the best basketball player. I would be a little disappointed if, for example, if Mykhailiuk went 25, he can shoot the crap out of the basketball, but he's not the best player there, right? Mm-hmm. So it would definitely raise an eyebrow with that caveat that I definitely give the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I go back and forth as to whether Thursday might be telling for what the Lakers think is possible or even probable. this upcoming year. Is there anything that you would see Thursday night that would make you think, okay, this is how they see this offseason playing out?
Well, the most obvious one is a trade, right?
Yeah.
It's Deng is tradable during the draft, and anything could signal that. Now, for example, the Atlanta Hawks have the 30th and 34th picks in the draft, and so last year the Lakers traded down from 28 to 30 to pick up the 47th pick, right? If the Lakers don't have – like for me, if Herter isn't there and maybe to a lesser extent DiVincenzo – if they wanted to trade 25 and Atlanta liked a guy, wanted to move up, I would love that trade, like a 30 and 34 type of deal. Don't necessarily know if that's indicative of what's going on, but for me, like, you're more looking at the trade market if you're trying to read the tea leaves for free agency.
Yep. All right. We'll take everybody out. We'll send everybody out with this. We'll do some wild predictions here. I'll start just to kind of set the tone here, but I think – this isn't even a Lakers prediction. I think Luka Doncic falls past the idiots that are like the. It's kind of funny with this draft. You have like bad organization Phoenix, bad organization Sacramento, you know, and then you got like the Mavericks are sitting there, I believe at five, right? And so the analysis of the way this draft has been mocked is like, all right, what do stupid organizations tend to do? And then what do smarter organizations tend to look for? And that's why I think Doncic falls past the stupid organizations and lands with Dallas.
Boy, that would be quite a boon for Dallas, man. Is for that, like, that kid can play. I understand the concerns about his feet and all that and who does he defend, but that kid can play. And he's been playing in the second best league in the world and killing it over there. So I could definitely see that, but there will be a couple of organizations that'll be kicking themselves if they do that.
Yep, I agree. Do you have any wild predictions?
You know, for the Lakers, I've heard that the Lakers have somebody that they like. And I heard that even before the draft process started, which was interesting. I don't know who that person is, and I've been trying to find out, and I wish I could be like, oh, like, I've heard rumblings about Herter, and we've all heard that, and Robinson and whatnot. I think the Lakers well, this is a wild prediction, right? Maybe not I think, but my wild prediction is that the Lakers trade down.
All right, I'm cool with that. My second wild prediction here, I think the Cleveland Cavaliers move their number 8 pick. And that sends everybody into a frenzy over thinking what LeBron James might be doing.
Oh, goodness gracious. You're right. I think this is going to be an active trade year at the draft. Nobody's got cap space, right? So yeah. If you're going to make that move, the draft's one of the good times to be able to do that. So what can Kevin Love and the number 8 pick get you?
Well, if they're attaching it to Kevin Love, man.
Can it get you Kawhi?
I don't know if that gets you Kawhi, but I do think it gets you Paul George. Like, yeah. I think that very comfortably gets you Paul George. I think it makes the team worse because Kevin Love is kind of valuable to what the Cavs try to do there. But the issue with trying to gauge any kind of Kawhi trade value here is the Spurs, they've literally never been in a situation where they traded away a bona fide star. Like, we don't have any – there's nothing to work off of here. And the Spurs are also, I think, proud enough to be borderline honorary in these trade negotiations. Like, they haven't even allowed any teams to talk to Kawhi Leonard's agent, according to – I think it was Woj and Lowe who also said that. And, like, it's crazy to me. Like, that's the kind of move you make if you really are convinced that either A, the market is going to jump out in front of you in a way that you really think it's going to, that it really helps you, or that you think you'll be able to keep the guy. I still think the Spurs really think they can keep him, and that makes them really dangerous in all this.
Yeah, I think you hit on a lot of the reasons why I'm skeptical that he'll end up with the Lakers, even if that's where he wants to be. And to me, it comes from absolutely, despite those guys, Buford and Popovich, being in charge for so long, they haven't faced a situation like this. So we don't really know how they behave. And then secondly, there have been reports that Popovich isn't going to coach beyond 2020. Mm-hmm. And do we know that, like, so we think of Jaylen Brown and Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and all of these potential prospects around the league. how much is Popovich going to care about that if he's not looking to coach for a long time? Mm-hmm. Do we know that they don't want to trade for a guy who's already a pretty good player and then maybe not as high of a prospect alongside that? So, like, does Tobias Harris in the 12th pick become more appealing? It may sound silly to a Laker fan, but to a guy like Popovich, does he want to be really coaching kids in the last couple of years of his career? And then, yeah, they've got control over that. They don't have to make a deal right now by any means. And I think they're going to try and keep him. They've got $219 million on the table, you know, and that's a very compelling argument to try and get it worked out. So, yeah, but that said, that if Cleveland looks to move that pick and attach it to Love or to somebody else, yeah, you're going to start hearing a lot more is LeBron staying in Cleveland.
All right, last question here. It's the, I believe, what is it, $36 million question? I think it's a $36 million question. Does Luol Deng remain a Laker past this draft?
Yes. I don't think he gets traded on draft night.
I think so too. It would, like, if Luol Deng gets traded, you're in my tones on the podcast right after, because we're planning on recording basically right after the Lakers either make their pick or the end of the night or whatever, however we're planning on doing this. But if Deng gets moved, you and I are going to sound like the smuggest NFers in all of draft coverage or draft reaction that night, because that's as telling a move as you're going to see, right?
Bro, that is a huge sign that the Lakers feel really good about what they're about to be able to do.
Yeah. And so if Deng gets, like, this is I don't even think it's a prediction at this point. I think this is a statement of fact that if the Lakers move Deng, that in and of its own is reason to celebrate that draft night above anything else for any team in the NBA. I would say the Lakers would feel better about moving Deng than maybe, you know, beyond the Suns making their first overall selection, because it's a draft pick, you don't really know. I would say the only thing that might rival it is if my buddy Kirk Henderson has Luka Doncic fall to the Mavericks, like he might be as happy as Laker fans there. But if the Lakers are able to move that Deng contract, that's one of the better nights that we've had in a really long time because of how telling that would be moving forward.
Well, how do you feel about it if one of the kids are attached to them?
It depends on the kid. It depends on the kid, right? So if it's Kuzma, like, here, this is going to sound really sad, or this is going to sound really callous, but if it's Kuzma, like, Kuzma's a great story. He seems like a great kid. He's garnering support from Kobe and The Rock. Like, that's star caliber eyes that he's catching, right? And it comes from work ethic, it comes from talent level, it comes from story, it comes from all over the place. But if he's attached to move that Deng contract, then I think you kind of sort of have to count it as a win, right? Like, the only situations where I would be really iffy about attaching anybody to a Deng contract is if it's Randall, because that kind of hard caps the Lakers, right? If it's Lonzo, because he's a number two pick, and now the Lakers have lived up to the market that they set with the D'Angelo Russell trade. Same reasoning for Brandon Ingram. But if it's like Kuzma, or if it's Hart, or it goes without saying, if it's Zubats, then I think you kind of, you know, it's a bummer, but you kind of have to feel, I think you have to outweigh the negative with the pro.
For me, my line is close, but I wouldn't underestimate Kuz. Like, and I know you're not knocking mm-hmm. him or anything like that, but to me, my line, and I'm putting Julius to the side because he's a free agent and the sign and trade stuff makes it trickier. So for me, the line is Josh Hart and below. Let's assume that Hart is the fourth best young guy under contract behind whatever order you want to put Kuzma, Ingram, and Lonzo. For me, like, I'd be okay with Hart moving, as much as I like him, or obviously Zoo or Thomas Bryant or anything like that, or any of the future firsts that the Lakers have. Because if they're able to move that contract, like, they can really go all in on this offseason and build a championship contender. Nothing short of that. So, but for me, Kuz, Lonzo, or Ingram, I'd be upset if any of those guys moved along with Deng, if that's all it was, right? Like, there'd have to be something coming back on the other end, aside from just the cap relief.
Yeah, and this is the last 2 cents here that I'll add to the Deng thing is the better the asset that's attached to Deng, the more confident the Lakers are that they'll be able to do something with that Deng space. And yeah. And so, like, you know, as a big a bummer as it would be that I would see Kuzma grow into the player that I think you and I both agree that he's going to be good. Like, he's going to be legit. As big a bummer as it would be to watch him grow into that elsewhere, like, if the Lakers are confident enough to attach Kuzma, a diamond in the rough that they found, right, a legitimate gem that they found late in the draft or late in the first – and was one of the first things that everybody points to as a success story for Magic and Rob Pelinka early on in their administrations. And if they're able and willing to attach that to Deng, that tells me that they are looking down the line and they really think that something bigger is coming on its way.
So, yeah, I mean, I can't get too upset until all the dust settles, right? Yeah. Like, it just
– I will.
Right, yeah, right. I can't, but I will. Exactly, right? That's being a fan, right? Exactly. But, yeah, like, we're going to kind of know what all of these moves are. I mean, heck, the first one of these was the D'Angelo Russell trade, right? Yeah. So, like, you know, we had our feelings about that and all that, but, like, we don't know if that's – going to work out or not in terms of toward their goal. I'd argue that the Josh Hart acquisition in particular, because they were going to take Kuzma either way with the pick that they already mm-hmm. had in the trade for Lou Williams. But Josh Hart being really good really bridged that gap for me. So it's worth the cap space that they, you know, that they achieved as a result of it. But I'm not going to judge any move individually with the exception of a draft pick until all of the dust settles and all of the guys sign where they're going to sign.
Yep, I completely agree. And that's a great place to end. We'll, next time we talk, you guys will hear Pete and I responding and reacting to draft night. And like we both, I think we both predicted on here that it's going to be a crazy active night because teams just don't have many other ways to improve. And there are a lot of teams out there with a lot of incentive to improve. So it's going to be a wild night. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be watching it at Pete's house. I'm really looking forward to that, dude.
Yeah, man, we're going to do a live Locked On Lakers or recorded live, I suppose, in the same room. So
yeah, we'll be in the same room. We might let Harrison in, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I'll be sure to get salad and I don't know
carrots
and Aquafina or whatever the hell he drinks. Like
part of it if we let Harrison in, like, we don't really have much choice. His neck just like extends into whichever room he prefers. It's the weirdest thing. All right, have a great day, everybody. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Pete will talk to you again on Friday. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon.